In Wisconsin, you've got government employees getting enormously generous pensions and contributing nothing towards it. And so they elect their own boss, and then the manager and the unions both negotiate to take more from the taxpayers who aren't represented at all.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV. Today we're talking with James Shirk, a senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. How does collective bargaining work?
Collective bargaining is basically a legal monopoly. When the government decides to collectively bargain with government employees, it agrees that it will only hire those workers and no one else, and that it will negotiate with those workers for the wages and the benefits and the other terms of employment. So let's say that you've got the teachers' unions insisting, well, you can't fire us no matter how badly any of our members perform. The government doesn't have the option of going to other teachers and saying, hey, we'd like to hire you, and we'd like a provision that if you do a bad job teaching, you'll be laid off, and if you do a good job, we'll give you merit pay. They can't do that. Under collective bargaining, they have to negotiate with the teachers' unions and come to some sort of agreement over the work rules and over the pay and benefits.
Does collective bargaining necessarily mean higher pay for state workers? Does it mean bigger deficits for state governments? North Carolina has a terrible budget situation with no collective bargaining rights, and then there are states that have similarly bad situations with collective bargaining.
Collective bargaining and the government pays only part of the state problems. You've got states where the housing bubble collapsed. Well, that had nothing to do with the unions one way or the other, but it's hurt their finances. So it's by no means the only problem. But it does contribute significantly in a number of states. In Wisconsin, you've got government employees getting enormously generous pensions and contributing nothing towards it, only paying 6% of their health care premiums. That's primarily because of the clout of the unions, both in terms of the bargaining table, and then what they negotiate is provisions where their members have to pay dues or get fired, and the state collects them. Well, that gives them millions of dollars each year that they spend very heavily on politics, electing their own bosses. And so they're essentially negotiating, instead of against a hostile management, they elect their own boss, and then the manager and the unions both negotiate to take more from the taxpayers who aren't represented at all.
So you think it would be a fairer situation if, in fact, the unions had to collect their dues, by themselves as opposed to working through the employer?
That's right. If you don't support the union's agenda, then you shouldn't have to pay. And these dues can be pretty expensive. Milwaukee Teachers Association, you have to pay $1,000 a year in these union dues.
The divergence between what public sector workers are getting in terms of benefits and private sector workers, is that driving a lot of the desire to pull things back into equilibrium?
That's right. They have to make cuts. And where would you rather cut? If you've got people who are getting way above market wages, well, that's a much more natural place to start making the cuts than with other groups who are far more sympathetic. And what the unions do systematically is negotiate for higher benefits. In the private sector, for each $1 you earn in wages, you'll get around 25 cents in benefits. Well, for the unions in Wisconsin, for the teachers' unions there, that's 74 cents in benefits for every dollar in pay they're getting. And the reason it happens is because cash wages are very transparent and obvious for the voters. But when you offer these very generous benefit packages, which average about $45,000 a year for the teachers in Milwaukee, well, it's not as obvious. And particularly the pension benefits and the retiree health benefits don't get paid until decades down the road after the contract's been awarded when the workers retire. So the incentive is always to say, all right, we'll give you what you want, but we'll do it in the form of benefits, and particularly retirement benefits, and sort of kick the can down the road. Don't have to raise taxes today, don't have to cut spending today, wait till tomorrow.
Wisconsin, for all of the drama there, it's a very heavily Republican legislature. It seems like it's going to go through. But what about in other states like Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, New Jersey, New York, California? What's likely to play out?
There's some states who are simply not going to be able to avoid making cuts to government compensation. California, New York, Illinois, very liberal states, but their budget situation is just so bad that a lot of these changes are going to be made there anyway. Now, in some of the more swing states, you've got a split. Some of the governors, some of the legislators want to take on the collective bargaining and fix the problem. They want to give back, finally, voters full control over how their tax dollars get spent and take this outside group off the bargaining table, have the election, but then when the voters make their say, they don't have to negotiate over how they want to spend their tax dollars, and they don't give a special interest that kind of privilege. So in Tennessee, you're seeing a move towards ending collective bargaining with the teachers' unions. In Ohio, there's a much weaker bill moving through the legislature that would end collective bargaining for the state employees, but leave it for the local government employees. And so there's a number of states that will go down that route. But at the same time, the unions, the real purpose of the protests in Wisconsin is not to try and win there. They know they're not going to win there. The purpose is to discourage other governors from taking down, going down that same path and from taking those same steps. So you're seeing governors like Corbett of Pennsylvania, Rick Snyder in Michigan, Rick Scott in Florida, saying, well, no, we'll ask for cuts in pay, but we're not going to address the fundamental problem of collective bargaining.
James Sherrick, Senior Policy Analyst at the Heritage Foundation, thanks very much for talking to Reason TV. I'm Nick Gillespie.